many times in my future career as a minister am I going to need to figure out something original to say about Christmas? They say that a good Sunday talk helps people make meaning of the world around them. This is not so hard when we're talking about philosophy or relationships, even suffering and death, but it sucks to try and help Unitarians make meaning of Christmas. If I were to talk to you today about, say, the eschatological origins of ideals of truth, I could be pretty sure, at the very least, you didn't just watch a movie last night with your grandkids in which the lovable but flawed main character spends an hour and a half discovering the true meaning of the eschatological ideals of truth. There'd be less competition, for one thing. Also, there'd be a reasonable chance that you wouldn't be starting with, well, I know what the meaning of the eschatological origins of ideals of truth isn't, that's for sure. Or, you know what I hate? It's having to talk about the eschatological origins of ideals of truth every single year. Or even, you know, there's nothing quite like the feeling of when a speaker truly captures the essence of the eschatological origins of ideals of truth, and I sure hope she gets it right, just like my mom did when I was little. So maybe this is why, in all those shows where someone discovers the true meaning of Christmas, they never really specify in concrete terms what that meaning is. There's always some pretty music. They fade to a lovely scene with lots of snow, maybe a few nice words, and we all leave the theater or pageant or vinyl cafe concert with a happy sense of contentment, or maybe annoyance with the sappiness of it all, but never with a concrete set of talking points. So in tackling the idea of what's the meaning of Christmas or the winter holidays for Unitarians, I'm going to take a leaf out of that holiday special booklet, and I'm going to skip trying to lead you through a logical sequence of reason and fact, and with an argument with a rational and measurable conclusion. Although, if I were trying to sum up what makes Christmas unique for Unitarians, it might be that we're the only guys who would attempt to talk about Christmas using a logical set of facts and arguments with rational and measurable conclusions. Fun fact, the song we just listened to during the offering was originally written as God Rest Ye Unitarians by a Unitarian Universalist minister, Christopher Rabel. And I like the song. It's kind of cheeky and cute. But as a way to make meaning out of the season, it kind of falls flat. So I'm going to try to talk to you about Christmas using stories rather than logic. That seems to be the best way. If that doesn't work, a close second, as I understand it, is buying stuff that nobody wants or needs, but I'm going to try with stories first. The Groot James family discovers the true meaning of Christmas, story number one. Her family was touring Saskatoon's Enchanted Forest. Every year, the forest around our local zoo is decorated with lights depicting all kinds of holiday scenes, and this is one of our favorite traditions to go and see them. We rounded the corner this particular year and gazed upon a scene of baby Jesus in the manger with a sign that read, The Christmas Story. The Christmas Story, read a little Eric, slowly sounding out the words. He looked at me and said, Tell me the Christmas story. They had a vague idea of the main points between public school and Unitarian Sunday school, though they never had heard the whole thing in its entirety. I was tongue-tied for a minute. I was thinking about the time we saw a picture of Noah's Ark, and they asked me to tell them that story and what a disaster that was. Partway through, they wanted me to elaborate on this main character, God, who I'd kind of given the impression was like a big talking rain cloud. And I realized I'd never really explained about God to them because they were really small, but I really wanted to do it justice. So I launched into what different people believe around the world and concepts of divinity, and their eyes glazed over because boy do I know how to wreck a really good story about a floating zoo in a talking rain cloud. So before launching into the Christmas story, I paused for a minute. I looked at the scene depicted in the lights, and I decided not to tell the boys the Christmas story, but to tell them our Christmas story. To do what people have done with Bible stories, with any stories, for centuries. Tell the story not as it originally may or may not have happened, but as it relates to the people listening in the moment. Well, a long time ago there lived a woman named Mary, who was, I believe, very young, hardly more than a girl. Mary had a baby growing inside of her, which was a problem in some ways. You have to have a special kind of cuddle to get a baby inside you, and Mary was supposed to wait to do that until after she was married. Now, maybe she didn't wait, maybe the baby got in there some other way, but either way, Mary was in trouble. She was scared because everybody was going to be angry with her, and because she had to push this baby out, which really hurts. And because once it was out, she was going to have to take care of it, and that's not easy either. And to make matters worse, somebody was after Mary's baby. Someone wanted to kill it, so she was really scared. And it was tax time for some reason, which meant they had to travel a long ways because they hadn't yet invented paperwork. So they had to travel this really long distance by donkey, which is really uncomfortable, and Mary was exhausted, and she started to feel a great pain in her tummy. The baby was coming. At home, there would have been people who had pushed out babies themselves to help her, but they were far away, and they didn't know anybody. Her husband Joseph went from hotel to hotel asking for a room, and nobody had space for him. Finally, someone let them use a barn, which was filled with animals and pokey straw and poop, and Mary had to push the baby out in the middle of the barn with no idea how to do it and feeling for all the world like she was not strong enough. And then something amazing happened. It turned out that Mary was strong enough, and her body showed her what to do. And she sat there looking down at her baby, and she was filled with the most amazing love for that little boy. And in that moment, she was no longer a scared young woman huddled in a sea of night with a powerful man trying to hunt her and her family. She was no longer far from home because the love and hope that filled her heart meant wherever she was became her family's home. The straw felt softer, the animals were quiet and calm, and she and Joseph cuddled the baby, and Mary realized that love makes a family wherever you are. And we tell that story at this time of year when days are short and it's easy to be filled with gloom as we wait for the sun to return, to remind ourselves that each of us carries a light inside of us and that nothing that is going on around you can keep you from letting that light shine. I think there's something else in that story, said Eric through narrowed eyes. I think you maybe forgot a part. Yeah, there's a star, piped up Anthony. Right, I said. Have you ever noticed how when a place is filled with good feelings, everybody wants to come over? Well, Mary created such a happy home that shepherds and angels and wise men wanted to come, and they even brought gifts so that Joseph and Mary weren't quite so poor anymore. They found their way using the star, and now we picture the shining star over the stable, and that reminds us how when we let our light shine, people want to come and be a part of that. And then I sat back for a moment, basking in the glow of my own little family, as the boys mulled over this story about being scared and maybe getting in trouble and finding out you can make family wherever you are. And the moment stayed beautiful until Eric said, "Now tell us about Hanukkah, and I'm going to cue the holiday music in the falling snow rather than tell you how awfully that turned out." I don't know a lot about Hanukkah. Groot James' family discovers the meaning of Christmas, part two. So the 99.8% of the holiday season that wasn't spent happily gazing at lights and telling meaningful and creative stories to the kids was usually spent shopping and wrapping and sitting there with my head in my hands while my two-year-old ran circles around me singing Winter Wonderland, Winter Wonderland, Winter Wonderland, and slowly wrapping me up in scotch tape. The Christmas I loved as a child was only ever present in very brief flashes, sandwiched between a very busy list of things to do. One day I was complaining about this to a friend of mine who grew up as a Maasai warrior in Kenya. I said, well, it could be worse. For all the work I had piling up, the Maasai women, living in huts and hauling water and firewood all day, surely had more to do. It's more work here, he said definitively. I'm paraphrasing a bit. Here the real work is already done, so you make new work, and everyone is always very busy because there is no end to new work. I felt a little bit defensive. What I do is necessary, important stuff. None of it is related to providing adequate shelter, food, water, education, or medical care for anybody, but it is important stuff. But I guess there's a difference between important stuff and necessary stuff. And there's so many things I feel I should do, and I'm generally right, but there's not that many really necessary ones. Well, your life changes a bit when you carry a mental stack of optional labels and start examining things carefully to see what you can stick those optional labels on in your life. And I started thinking about Christmas, about what I loved and what I hated and what mattered the most to me. And one of the things I wish could be optional was Christmas presents. It sounds very Scroogey to say, but I don't like buying them, I don't like giving them, and I don't like getting them. I think that people who derive joy from that part of Christmas are generous, wonderful, very organized people, but that's not me. I'm wonderful in other ways. Ways that don't involve lists. But how do you stop buying Christmas presents? Well, it turns out all you have to do is stop buying Christmas presents. This will be our fourth year without buying Christmas gifts for anyone. We pick a craft or two, something simple like baking or felt candy cane mice, and like gleeful elves, we put together a whole giant batch of whatever it is, and it goes out to everybody. Same thing. Friends, relatives, teachers, people the kids pass on the street. Everybody gets the same gift. We make things for one another, too, usually out of pipe cleaners and old bits of string, and stuff we find in the recycling bin. In our household, a common Christmas morning quote is, "Thank you so much, what is this?" Our three-year-old kept declaring that first year, "I get to be Santa." Now, when we started this, I didn't think it would work. Christmas was too big to be changed by a mere mortal such as myself. I believed it wasn't possible that this dramatic a change could ever last. I believed the kids were going to hate it. And when I tell people about this grand experiment, they often say in a kind of awed voice, "How did it work out? What happened?" What happened was very little. It was very anticlimactic. On the surface, it's pretty much exactly the same Christmas. The kids still have a few things under the tree, stuff we made, stuff that came from grandparents, stuff like that. The ritual is the same. The excitement level is exactly the same. There's still all the cooking and baking and singing and decorating and eating and visiting, and it turns out Dr. Seuss was right and Christmas doesn't come from a store. It took me a couple years, though, to notice there is a change, a very subtle and profound change that's happened. Christmas runs deeper now for us. Each ritual of Christmas, visiting the enchanted forest, singing carols, decorating cookies, each of these has taken on a new meaning. In part because we've got more time now, without all the shopping and the wrapping. But it's more than that. When there's a big pile of gifts as the main event, all the little preparations become little more than tasks, like a prologue. Things to do to keep busy until the real Christmas is unwrapped on the 25th. And now these rituals have an importance and a meaning in our lives that they didn't have before. They've become the real Christmas. We live Christmas now rather than accomplish it. There's a second shift that I'm starting to notice. This whole presents thing really worked. I didn't think it was going to work. It seemed insane at the time, but it worked. I'd even say it was easy. Doesn't mean it would work for someone else, or even that it would be a good idea for someone else. We all value different things about the holiday, but it worked for us. And as parents, we have more power and responsibility to choose the terms of family life than we realize. This has become deeply obvious to me as I watch my boys each year lovingly putting together gift after gift out of stuff out of the recycling bin. I have 9 presents under the tree, Eric told me last year, his whole body shivering with glee like the lid of a pot about to boil over. He let out a laugh of sheer joy before dumping them down in front of me and declaring again, 9! He was the very image of a typical 8-year-old boy waiting for Christmas until he began lovingly tallying up his gifts. This one's for you, this one's for Dad. He paused in the sorting of his presents that he'd made for various members of the family and declared, "Mom, I have more under the tree than anybody." Maybe it's because I'm the only one who knows how to use the printer. I'd like to stop the story there because at this point we look really good as a family, don't we? This is a great time to turn up the music and fade to a snowy scene, declare we discovered the true meaning of Christmas, and hope nobody follows up on that too specifically during discussion. Because in this one part of the story, in this one moment, our house was alight with a perfect holiday scene. Not so much if you stick around and see all the other moments of that particular month, because it's really hit and miss for us, and we never get it perfect. Christmas at our house is like something out of the Vinyl Cafe Christmas special. If you've never listened to Vinyl Cafe Christmas on CBC, I'll give you the basic outline. Christmas is anticipated by everyone with great excitement and much preparation. Then Christmas is screwed up, often by Dave. I'm Dave in our family. One year he forgets to make the turkey, another year they lose the class ferret who's home for the holidays, another year they get stuck in a storm with no dinner and nowhere to stay, that kind of thing. And then not so much through Christmas magic per se as a joint family determination to find a way to make Christmas out of whatever's in front of them, things end up going pretty well. Never perfect, but always beautiful in their way. It's kind of like the nativity story. Because here's the truth of it, I think. I think that when Mary laid her baby in the manger, the animals did not become quieter, and the straw did not become softer. Maybe the beauty of the baby made those things unimportant, but I doubt it. In my experience, having had a couple of kids, childbirth and newborns do not make your sleeping conditions any less important. And they sure don't make the presence of large and unpredictable animals any more relaxing. And any unresolved issues in the marriage are not solved by the addition of a tiny and demanding family member. The baby fixes nothing. But all the stuff that needs fixing, all these things that aren't as perfect as somehow we know they should be, these things don't diminish the beauty of the baby either. The bad coexists with the good. The animals and the straw and the love of parent and child. The dark night and the star of Bethlehem. Things being wrong with Christmas, turkeys forgotten, missing ferrets, incomplete piles of presents, these things are part of the tradition. So is consumerism, challenges with family, loneliness. The Christmas, like the baby, fixes nothing. But it doesn't mean that we can't celebrate in whatever huge and elaborate or tiny and peaceful way is meaningful for us. The bad and the good go together. And Christmas is bendier than we think. It doesn't break when you change the way you tell the nativity story. It doesn't break when you change a tradition that doesn't fit, like gifts didn't for us. It didn't break when Unitarian Charles Dickens decided to write a new kind of story about the meaning of Christmas, one without the birth of Jesus or the existence of Santa Claus. It didn't break when Unitarian Charles Follen first chose to decorate for the holidays in a way quite novel to the United States by bringing in an evergreen tree and filling it with candles. If I did have the authority to impart some kind of Christmas blessing, I wouldn't wish for you to have a season of calm, or a season without loneliness, or a season of joy and great meaning. I wouldn't get nearly so specific as that. I would wish for you to carry with you a spirit of playfulness into the holidays, a sense of your own power to really pay attention to what matters and what doesn't. A sense that you can experiment, play around, even fail gloriously, as we've all done on more than one occasion, and things will be fine. It's the nice thing about Christmas. You can't break it. No matter what you do, it will come back next year because it's reliable like that. We can write more of this story than we realize. I told my younger sons a new story, one in which the meaning of the Star of Bethlehem was how Mary's love filled the barn and everything was made okay and everyone wanted to come and be part of that light. I felt good because I had taken a story I always thought was kind of full of hooey and turned it into something that was true to what I believed, in a way. In another way, still kind of full of hooey. Sure, Mary carried the light in her, and we know that even in the worst conditions, people do this. And sure, the light can create a world of love for her and her tiny baby, but it doesn't make things better, and it doesn't get you out of the barn, and it doesn't even make being in a barn less uncomfortable, I bet. But that's not how precious moments work. Joy doesn't come from fixing pain, it's something that happens alongside it. Light isn't about elimination of darkness, it's about our power to coexist with whatever happens, to find beautiful moments nestled in family discord, to find companionship for some parts of an otherwise lonely season, or to find pockets of calm in a month of chaos. Christmas meaning doesn't come from figuring it all out, or from perfect traditions or a great plan. It's not an overarching thing you succeed at. It's something that happens in flashes, nestled in with all that other stuff. I've found that for these types of things, I have to grope my way along by feel. Reason only gets me so far, because it's kind of an emotional question. So I might stumble on a new way to tell an old story, or find a way to adapt existing traditions so they feel right. I figure out what I can let go of by trying it out and by seeing how it goes. This is the part in the talk where the conclusion was going to go. I don't have one of those. Not because I didn't write one. I wrote several of them, and I tossed them all because I didn't like them. None of them were good. There's really no way I can think of to tie this topic up in a bow. I've told you a couple stories about how we've played around with how we celebrate the holidays, and they might resonate with you. They might not. And I can't tell you how to find meaning in this season, and lucky for all of us, that's not my job. It's not a topic you wrestle with purely by lecturing or hearing someone else's opinions. It's a back and forth conversation. So the next part of this isn't a conclusion from me, but a response from you. What do you do at this time of year? What works for you? What do you wish that you could change? What wisdom do you have about how to celebrate holidays? I'm going to repeat those questions because I went through them really fast. What do you do at this time of year? What works for you? What do you wish you could change? And what wisdom do you have about the holidays? Fortunately, in my script, it says discussion right after presentation. Isn't that lucky? Now, I don't know enough about your timing to know passing it around and when to wrap up, so my service leader, who was only a service leader for 3 minutes, but he's a service leader again.
Thank you. It's quite interesting because I'm not a Christian, and I'm a païen artiste, as they say in French. And it's all the aspect of story. And I would relate to my own story, where you are the tree. And this is the only time where my parents were not fighting. And it's also, you have a birthday in everywhere in the world, so you celebrate your birthday, but also you celebrate your first name. And Christmas was always the time where everything was quiet, everything was nice, everything was idyllic. And there was no fighting. There was just bliss. And it reminds me also of a movie about the First World War. And that's a movie between the French and the German. And at Christmas, somebody starting to sing Silent Night in German, and somebody on the other side in France started to sing Silent Night in French, and they stopped fighting, and they rose from, how do you say,
the ditches,
they rose from the ditches and went to hug each other and sang and drank, and they were really, really, really happy. And on the 25th, everything was calm and quiet on the Western Front. And on the 26th, bombs shelling started again. It's almost my life, and I thought that is quite interesting. Thank you, because you mentioned that. Thanks.
The only thing I wish is that in the stores they would quit playing that damn music.
Yeah, when my daughter was two, she sort of caught on an idea about presents. So she sort of quietly wandered around the house and rounded up things people kept asking for, like her dad would always be asking, "Where's a pencil?" And so she found two pencils, found a little bit of paper, wrapped it up, and did the same for the other people in the family. And I've always remembered that, because that seemed great. You know, what do people really seem to want and have handy?
My dad did that one time. He gave us about six pairs of scissors for Christmas. Okay. Oh, I'll go here.
I have no family in Canada, and I used to get anxious about, well, all the holidays, but particularly Christmas, because everybody's together with family. And so I would get anxious, and then I finally thought, well, so I'll make family. So I was invite friends over, close friends who are really my family here. So, but one Christmas I decided to try and be on my own. That was very scary. So I built a fire. I have a fireplace. I pulled all the furniture out of the dining room where the fireplace was, and made a meal of salmon. I was not going to make turkey because that was too traditional. And actually, I had a lovely time reading and playing some beautiful music and eating good food. But, you know, in the end, I still miss my friends, so I still try and organize something with my friends.
Well, like Ingrid, I'm not someone who has family here anymore. It's funny, I sometimes look around and wonder where they all went. And I know where they all went, but it is a strange feeling to be alone. So I've been chasing Christmas and running away from it, more running away from it than chasing it, for about 20 years. And so every year I tend to do something different. I will run away to Bermuda to my brother, which I'm not doing this year, or I will choose to respond to an invitation from somebody, as long as they don't have children, that they are going to have 46 presents for each one of them under the tree, and I'm going to sit and watch them unwrap thousands of things they don't need. And I run away, and I run away from it. But I don't know, I just wanted to tell a story about something that was the most meaningful Christmas that I personally experienced. And it was 2 years ago. And it was Christmas Eve. It was 2 o'clock on the day before Christmas. And I stopped at Nikki's Cafe on 8th and Winnipeg for one of their wonderful peppercorn hamburgers. And I found that they were closed. But I was there. So Nikki being Nikki, they opened the place up and let you in. I ordered my hamburger. Somebody else came in, and it was a couple, a young couple, and they were escorting an old man. And it was about minus 26 that day. And here we were, out on 8th and Winnipeg, and this older man, he was probably about 80, was wearing street shoes and a fairly light jacket. And I thought he must be very cold. How nice that they brought their dad in to get warmed up. And of course, Nikki bustled around and provided soup and coffee. And as it turned out, I had a Greek restaurant, and my waitress was able to tell me that she was Italian, and this old man spoke only Italian. It happened that she was there that day. She could speak to him, and it turned out he was a dementia patient from the Pasco Hospital who had wandered away out the open doors, and the young couple who had picked him up were just passers-by. And they picked him up, and they brought him into the restaurant, and Nikki's staff provided free coffee. And this is not an ad for Nikki's restaurant, but and they comforted him, and in a little while, the door opened again, and in came the police. Someone had obviously called for the police to help take him back where he belonged. And they came in, and I thought they would come bustling up and haul him away, and they didn't. They came in, they spoke to him very gently, they all sat down, there were everybody sat down, Nikki brought more coffee, there was coffee all around and conversation, and I wasn't leaving. I want to see the end of this story. But eventually, they very gently escorted him out, and everyone went home. And I thought, for me, that was a Christmas tableau of some kind, because there was just this feeling of generosity and kindness and gentleness, and it was my best Christmas experience. Sure beat watching kids unwrap presents anyway.
I too have a little trouble with presents, and so I tend to avoid attending my own family holiday until after the day. But for me, one of my most memorable Christmases, I was in a detox center, and there were probably 10 or 15 of us, and the staff who came in and worked were very kind and made sure we had a beautiful Christmas, and strangers gave gifts. And I always remember that. Like, and I mean, as sort of in a messed up state, most of us smoked. And so people gave cigarettes and tobacco and, you know, just things that were very kindly received. And I felt at that point, I've never actually needed to have another Christmas for me. That was my Christmas forever, because the kindness of strangers was paramount. And I just felt so blessed.
I have a little bit longer story this time. One of my daughters was maybe 12 or 13, we had unwrapped the presents, and there were presents all over the place and wrapping paper a mountain high. And she said, "Oh, this is disgusting. You know, we shouldn't be doing this." And so I said, "Well, Jennifer, what are you proposing?" She said, "Well, when I grow up, I'm not going to have," and then she started listing, "I'm not going to have a dishwasher, I'm not going to have a hairdryer," it went on and on, "I'm not even going to have a car unless I absolutely have to have a car to get to work, etc., but I'm going to have a bicycle." So I said, "Can I write this down?" And she said, "Yes, go ahead." So I wrote it down. It's still in the top drawer of my dresser. And, of course, she has everything now, you know, and she has three daughters. And every once in a while I remind her of this list, and she starts chuckling. And the interesting thing that came up, she said, "Can I have that list to pass down to my kids?" So she's going to get the list.
Okay, I'm getting the signal that I think it's probably time to do the rest. Thank you. Those were great stories.
Thanks, everyone. It's great.